Well, the Roman Institute of David Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, that's not the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is July the 8th, 2025, or it is the 14th day of the 4th lunar month, 2029. Our service today is continuation of two times of greeting. It'll be number 43, uh-huh. Time of Greeting, Volume 2, H.T. Hall of Texas address, January the 1st, 1949. That was at, and the name was, our subject is a dead top, an offshoot, or an upshoot, which. We'll start with our prayer thought, taken from the testimony, volume 5, page 43. It says, we have marked illustrations of the sustaining power of the firm religious principle. For the gaping lions, then, could not keep Daniel from his daily prayers, nor could the fiery furnace induce Shadrach and his companions to fall down before the idol which the Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Young men who have the firm principle will eschew pleasure, defy pain, and brave even the lion's den and the heated fiery furnace rather than be found unto Yahweh. Mark the character of Joseph. Virtue was severely tested, but its triumph was complete. At every point, the noble youth endured the test. The same lofty, unbending principle appeared at every trial. Yahweh was with him, and his word was law. Testimony, Volume 5, page 43. Let us now pray that we shall have the religion of David, of the Daniel, of the Joseph. These men were but youth when they entered upon their responsive careers, yet they were as firm in their convictions as a needle to the pole. They did not digress from a single righteous duty or principle, regardless of pressure or circumstances. The stability of the character and zeal that makes the world better persuaded Yahweh to make them kings. Now we are to pray that we be not obstructions, but that we be builders in the highway of the civilization, that rather than merely take up space, we be fruitful vines in the Yahweh's great vineyard. End of prayer thought. As we go now into our study, a dead top, an offshoot, or an upshoot, which one are you? All people down through the ages that have ever embraced a fresh message from the Yahweh were branded as offshoots and considered dangerous, something from which one must beware lest he be shot at, as it were, or stabbed, trapped, or something as bad or hard to tell what. As you know, we also are branded as such and are accused of the leaving the SDA denomination, even as much as were the apostles accused of the leaving Judaism and taking up a Christianity. So, in other words, Judaism would translate into the apostolic congregation of the Church of the Nazarenes, of the 12 apostles, and Christianity is an advanced generic name that they put in the place of apostolic. How confused can you get all in one place? Actually, the apostles had left nothing for they not only took along with them every truth that the Judaism had, really they went on with the fresh truth of the Yahshua also, the Savior, and their Savior and Redeemer, whereas Judaism fell back. That would be the Muslims. I mean, that would be the Pharisees and the Sadducees. For the apostles, moreover, would have remained in the synagogue if the Jews, the Pharisees, had apostatized Judaism, had not driven them out. For this, the apostles were called offshoots or the like. For we likewise have not pulled away from the denomination. Let's read that again. For we, as the division Seventh-day Adventists, or they call us Shepherd's Rod, have not pulled away from the SDA congregation that have been cast out of our respective churches and forced to go by another name, Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, and all this for no other reason than for the embracing of the additional heaven-born truth, which gives power and force to the Advent message, early writings, verse 277, and which makes us better, a Seventh-day Adventist, than we have been or could otherwise. For now, if we be offshoots for the walking and the right which the heaven sends from time to time to lead the Yahweh's people in the way of the truth and righteousness, then I should like to know what our brethren think they themselves are, for by the same token of the logic, the mother denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist, is itself an offshoot from another denomination. Moreover, this is also true of all the Protestant denominations, but they are the offshoots of the Catholic, and the Apostolic is an offshoot of the first Jews, Judah. I'm going to say Judah because it was the tribe of Judah that we're dealing with here, and not just the 12 tribes, we're dealing with the one tribe, Judah, that the Pharisees were notoriously members of, who then outside of the Jews is not an offshoot. In fact, if we go as far back as Abraham's time, we will find that even the Jews were an offshoot of something before their time. If the offshoots are therefore to be shunned, hated, and abhorred, then why are there any Christians at all? And if this is an eye-opener under those who think themselves something other than an offshoot, they should now, without delay, apply for the admission to the synagogue, or else they begin to behave like the Yahweh's men. It says that, do you, brother, sister, see that if it had not been for the offshoot, for those who had the backbone of their own to stand up for the present truth, for meet in the due season, Matthew 24:45, none of us would ever have had a chance to become Christians, Protestants, Adventists, or Davidians, Seventh-day Adventists. We all would have been members of the Yahweh forsaken synagogue, if of anything, and fact. We would have had no Bible religion at all, for the Jews themselves have departed even from what little they had retained of it 2,000 years ago. Should we then not be thankful for the faithfulness of the offshoots who have gone before us, if such they be, and of whom Yahshua is the first? I, for one, am proud to be called an offshoot with my Yahshua. I therefore like to be an offshoot, but would dislike to be a dead top, our hostile brethren, though, are mistakenly calling us offshoots. Rightly, we should be called upshoots, for that is what the additional truth does to the church. and to anyone who accepts it for a tree that does not put forth an upshoot in the season its shoot is either dying or is already dead. Plainly, then, without us upshoots, the brethren would have no chance to survive the letter sin malady and no chance to reach the kingdom of the glory, for they will, while dying, forever be dreaming of being rich and increased with the goods, though in fact Yahshua himself points out that they are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:17, and know it not. How thankful they ought to be to us who have withstood their fiery darts for the sake of the truth. It's the leaders, and it's the main prophet of the Adventist Church that infiltrated the Adventist Church, the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, and their president is a Jesuit Catholic, and so they're not the original church, Adventist. They're not the foundation. They're the invaders. And so that's what you're having. That's why you have new truth raised up. These invaders come in and take over the church. Mm-hmm. And then you have to raise up the layman with the present truth to carry on, or the line of truth would die. Mm-hmm. For the Jesuits, they would kill it. In the 20th chapter of Matthew, we find five such upshoots. Would you like to know who these upshoots are? To facilitate the study of them, I have prepared this chart, and now is your opportunity closer to look at it and faithfully to consider it. So this chart is a reproduction of the parable found in the 20th chapter of the Matthew, the parable in which Yahshua points out that the house holder, Yahweh, in the course of time, hard labors to on five different occasions. Let us now read the parable itself. Matthew 20:1-7. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said, Smite them, go you also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise, and about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Last time you hear all the day idle. They say unto him, because no man has heard it, which saith unto him, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. Well, your 11 hours of the day marks a full day. And I sure went and met those workers standing in the marketplace at the 11th hour, meaning the 11th hour was over. And there was one more hour left. So, actually, he went in the 12th hour, and he found him standing out. And the 12th hour is your harvest time. And he said, why stand you here all the hour? No matter how. So he tells them, you go home and go to bed tonight, and you report for work in the morning. And that's in the 12th hour. Because there's a harvest to be done in the last hour. And that's the hour they were in. For the first laborers were the Jews in the Moses' day, coming out of Egypt with Yahshua and Moses. Yahshua was that rock in the cloud that led them by the day and night. Now since the next, the ones that were hired at the third hour were the no, it wasn't. They weren't the Christians. They were the apostolics. The apostles. They're sure chosen. It follows that today, the 12th allegorical hour of the parable, and or the 12 allegorical hours of the parable, in which the horn is actually carried out, is symbolical of a period of time. For it is the horn, for it is the time in which the written word of the Yahweh, the Bible, appears and shines directly to mankind, the period since the Moses' day. And as much as the first laborers, the Jews, were the ones hired early in the day, the day Moses began to write the Bible, the light from the Yahweh, and caused it to shine upon the world, brought the day, the word early, therefore, implies that the period which preceded the appearance of the Bible is the parabolic night, when there was no Bible on the earth. There was no direct spiritual light, but only the indirect moon fashion. Finally, then, the period before the Moses and the period after the Moses, the period without the Bible, and the period with the Bible, complete the cycle of the 24 symbolical hours on which Yahweh based his parable, and of which this chart, page 6, is a reproduction. For we have now seen that the absence of the Bible light before the Moses time caused the time to to be symbolized by the night, and the presence of the Bible light since Moses' time caused that period to be called the day. For the first group of the laborers have been the Jews, the Israelites coming out of Egypt, and the second, the apostolic at the cross. The next three calls consequently point to unto another three groups in the apostolic era who have been commissioned to go into the vineyard. There they are to preach something as original as was the ceremonial system of the worship which the Moses preached, and also as original as the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension of Yeshua, which the apostles preached for the message of the one must be comparable unto the message of the other. That is, if the first two messages were original, the last three must also be original. For the only such original message given after the preaching of the apostles is the 2300 prophetic days of the Daniel 8:14, it being first preached by the First Day Adventists soon after 1820 A.D., the Great Controversy, 331. And being the third message in the line of the parabolic calls for the servants shows that in the stream of the parabolical time, the hour struck six in the 1820 A.D. The next call for the servants to preach something just as new and original came in the year 1844. It was the cleansing of the sanctuary after the 2300 prophetic days were passed and was preached and the connection with the Seventh-day Sabbath. That group of the servants called themselves Seventh-day Adventists, for they proclaim purely Yahweh and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters, Revelation 14:7. All right, as we continue here, it says, for the ninth parabolic hour, therefore, struck with the rise of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1844. But the fact that there is another call for the servants, that of the 11th hour, the last, points out that after the message of the 1844, there is to be another such original message, and also a new group of Seventh-day Adventists to proclaim it. This message, the 11th hour message, moreover, is to be a layman's movement for the laborers were found idle and in search of employment in the marketplace. So the market where the master is said to have gone after such employment seekers is the Seventh-day Adventist Church, where the Yahweh, for Yahshua, chooses his servants only from among his well-informed people. Should we be reminded again and again that in the introduction of each message, the householder was compelled to hire new servants from among the laity, and did not the ministers always stand aloof, doing all they could to prevent others from coming in touch with the messages? What a weighty thought. What a responsibility that rests upon the brethren who are now shepherding the flock. For the question, why stand ye all the day idle, is very definitely saying that those who are hard are not of those who were already at work, not of the ninth hour ministry, because these were hard at the 11th hour, these last ones. And the answer, because no man has hired us, makes it emphatic that the 11th hour workers are of the faithful laity of those who are anxiously waiting to serve the Yahweh, but who previously have not been given the opportunity. At this last message, inspiration warned the denomination by leaving on the record the lines which I shall now read. I saw, says the E.G. White, angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, descending onto the earth, and again ascending to heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. Then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend to the earth to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. This message seemed to be an addition to the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel's message in 1844, Early Writings 277. And what should that message be, if not an urgent preparation for the judgment of the living? Again I read, let heaven guide. Prophecy must be fulfilled. The Yahshua says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah. And when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. Testimonies to Ministers, page 475. If you wish to study the parable in all of its details, You may do so by reading the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, page 222 to 239. And we'll try to remember to do that when we get through here. So it says, now you see that the so-called officers Yahshua himself calls Yahweh's servants. We can therefore honestly and sincerely ask, can the church and the world get strong without the unpopular officers? For the answer is simple. If they could have gotten along without the early hour servant and without the servants of the third, sixth, and the ninth hour, then the church and the world could get along without the 11th hour servant, the so-called officers also. But in such a sad condition, what could the world be like? However, since the announcement of the separation of the saints from the sinners originates with the 11th hour servant, and since they are to cry aloud and say, awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean, Isaiah 52:1, and also to say, behold, upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth salvation. O Judah, keep thy solemn faith, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no longer pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. Nahum 1:15. For it follows that without the 11th hour message and servant, the church Zion would be left sleeping forever, never to behold the feet of him who brings these good tidings, of him who publishes peace, and never to put on her beautiful garment, never to be fitted for the kingdom. I say that if left in such an unhappy and unholy state, the very elect would forever remain unclean and unsanctified, deceived, and since the 11th hour servants, the Davidians, are the ones unto whom the message of this cleansing, the judgment of the living, is committed, then those who on account of it are our enemies, those who are doing everything they can to keep the common people ignorant of the truth and from coming in contact with it, are the very ones who are endeavoring to see the very elect, if possible. Thank Yahweh, that is impossible. We should therefore now proclaim these good tidings of the peace, even with a greater zeal than ever, for commands of Yahweh. Say unto the house of Israel, the church, thus saith Yahweh, I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them, and the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, saith Yahweh, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes, for I will take you from among the heathen and get it you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all of your filthiness, and from all of your idols will I cleanse you, for a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. Ezekiel 36:22-28. He will not do for us lightly. It will not do for us lightly to pass over these verses of the scriptures. As we and the holding Seventh-day Adventist denomination have been doing hitherto, for all of us should carefully note that the Yeshua is to sanctify himself by the taking his elect from among the heathen and out of all countries, and bring them into their own land, into the land of their fathers. Then when they return into their father's land, says the scripture, will he sprinkle clean water upon them, and thus shall they be cleansed from all their filthiness and from all their idols. Then and there they are to be given a new heart and a new spirit, and be made to walk in the Yahweh's statutes and to keep his judgment. To this adds the Yeshua. Not for your sake do I this, says Yeshua. Be it known unto you, be ashamed and confounded for your own ways, O house of Israel. Thus saith Yeshua, in the day that I shall have cleansed you from all your iniquities, I will also cause you to dwell in the city, and the waste shall be builded, and the desolate land shall be tilled, whereas it lay desolate in the sight of all that passed by, and they shall say, this land that was desolate is become like the Garden of Eden, and the waste and desolate and ruined city are become fenced and are inhabited. Then the heathen that are left round about you shall know that I, Yeshua, build the ruined places and plant that was desolate. I, Yeshua, have spoken it, and I will do it. Thus saith Yeshua, I will yet for this be inquired of by the house of Israel to do it for them. I will increase them with men like a flock, as a holy flock, as a flock of Jerusalem and her solemn feast. So shall their waste cities be filled with the flocks of men, and they shall know that I am the Yeshua. Ezekiel 36:32-38. No one dares say that these promises have taken place, and no one dares say that they are post-millennial. Think on them and study them over, my brother, my sister. Do not lightly dismiss them, for they are your life. They mean your salvation, your destiny, your eternity. No one is fit to live and reign with Yeshua during the 1,000 years who does not participate in this cleansing. Finally, those who cast us out and who speaks evil against us, those who are desperately fighting to keep the message from the people, I am sure you now plainly see are the very ones who are used by the rebel leader to deceive even the very elect if possible. Matthew 24:24. They are those who cast us out of the churches, which we help build. Those who are threatening the laity, forbidding them to read the literature and commanding them to consign it to the stove, and in order to keep them ignorant of the Yahweh's message for the hour, and their efforts, though, will come to naught as very as did the efforts of the leading of Jews against the Yahshua's first advent. For this obvious reason, the church cannot get along without us offshoots, or rather upshoots, and yet be saved for eternity. Let me now read Yahweh's promise and encouragement for us all. Hear the word of Yahweh, ye that tremble at his word, your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let the Yahweh be glorified, but he shall appear to your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Isaiah 66:5. Okay, our new subtitle are the Davidians, their message, and their success in prophecy. That's our next question. Now, to this question, I say that they must be of Yahweh, is responsible. I say that they must be, if the Yahweh is responsible for their coming into being. Please turn with me to Hosea 1:10. Yet the number of the children of the Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered, and it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, you are not my people, there shall be said unto them, you are the sons of the living Yahweh. Then shall the children of the Judah and the children of the Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Here you see that the Jews were to be rejected, the Pharisees, at the cross, from being Yahweh's people. And you well know that this came to pass when Yahshua said unto them, behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Matthew 23:38. For the prophecy, nevertheless, continues in projects to the gathering time, the time that the Yahweh's penitent people appoint unto themselves one head, a king. These are not of the unconverted Jews of today. Really, they are of the descendants from among those who have been assimilated by the nations and by the antitypical apostolic church, from those who have lost their identity and who are now as the sands of the sea in number, but who now as the Gentiles to their own and to their world, short-sighted knowledge, have accepted Yahshua. Ye who have missed my past studies on the subject, may read Tommy Greetings, Volume 1, Number 29, and Track Number 8, Mount Zion, at the 11th hour. Who is the earthly head king whom the scriptures say the people are to appoint at the gathering time? Let us read. Hosea 3, 4, and 5. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, and without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without teraphim. Afterwards shall the children of Israel return and seek the Yahshua, their Savior, and David their king, and shall fear the Yahshua and his goodness in the latter days. David and this Yahshua together makes up the ensign for our day. In this part of the prophecy, you see, we are told that after they have sojourned among the Gentiles for many days without a king and without any sign of the identification, having been entirely lost sight of as a nation and as a people, they shall finally have the untypical David rule over them. For this would not be the ancient David, as he was already dead when this prophecy was made. Nevertheless, could this promised David be the Yahshua himself? For Yahshua is the son of David, Matthew. Let's read that again. Neither could this promised David be the Yahshua himself, for the Yahshua is the son of the David, Matthew 22:42. Not David himself, and if he shall, moreover, sit on the throne of David, Luke 1:32, then David must have a throne for him to sit on. Furthermore, you will note that Hosea 1:11 promises that the great shall be the day of Jezreel. And who is Jezreel? Well, in the chapter you find that he is Hosea's firstborn, a son, in the allegory. And that part of the allegory that belongs unto the Judean dispensation, and that is found in the first chapter of the Hosea, with the names of the two younger children, are prefixed with the L-O. But in the part of the allegory that applies unto the apostolic dispensation, unto the gathering time, as seen in the chapter 2, for the letters lo are dropped out, and just as the title Jews we find dropped out by the New Testament church, and the title apostolics, and Richard Hall said Christians, that's not right. The correct word is apostolics, antitypical apostolics. And that would be, first and foremost, 144,000 taken instead. You will find a detailed study of these chapters in tract number 4, The Latest News for a Mother, the second chapter of Hosea begins with the command, Hosea 2, 1-5, say ye unto your brethren Ami, and unto your sisters Ruama, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, Now that am I her husband, let her therefore put away her whoredom out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst, and I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of the whoredom, for their mother hath played the harlot. She that conceived them hath hath done shamefully, for she said, I will go out to my lovers that give me my bread and my water, my wheat and my flesh, my oil and my drink. Obvious it is that Yahweh is commanding Jezreel as the firstborn of the three children to speak unto his brother Ami and unto his sister Ruama, who in the allegory or symbolical of the laity, both male and female, for the mother whom they are commanded to reform, is a symbolical of the ministry of those who bring forth converts into the church family. For the one to whom the Yahweh speaks, Jezreel, therefore is symbolical of a prophet. Here, you plainly see that the revival and reformation does not come through the Seventh-day Adventist ministry, the mother, but through the laity of the 11th hour, those that are standing idle in the marketplace, and that is your, what we call the Branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist at Gilead Center that was taught by Brother Sean. The children and that their ministry, the mother is even greater than even greater need of the Reformation than the laity, where the mother is being accused of disloyalty and is by the children advised to reform. This indeed is a laity movement directed by the spirit of the prophecy, by the Jezreel's heaven and scarred effort and message. For the fact that the day of the Jezreel is to be great, together with the fact that he is a symbol of a prophet, proves that not only the Davidian message itself is in the prophecy, but that so also are its success and the need of the Reformation therein recorded. Here you see that the enemy's wicked effort to squelch the message and to make Jezreel work of the nun effect will come to naught, for great shall be the day of the Jezreel, says the Almighty One, that's Yahweh the Father, while he brings all his people out of the land. And his son is that one that brings us out of the land. Yeshua. Hosea 1:11. For the message unto the later sins also is directed at the ministry. For says the Yeshua. Revelation 3:14-16. And unto the angel, Brother W. Johnson, Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, 2002 at the Passover, of the congregation of the Gilead Center Led to Sin, Third Feeding Pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist, write, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold nor hot. Thus is addressing one person, and that would be the prophet. to the candlestick of Lady Sarah, as Brother Johnson, 2002. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Here too, the angel, the minister, who has charge of the church, is again reproved and plainly requested to reform. For the Ezekiel also is a witness of the startling revelation, for he declared that the cleansing begins at the ancient men which were before the house. Ezekiel 9:6, let us turn to Ezekiel's prophecy. Ezekiel 9:1-10, he cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, 6 men came from the way of the higher gate, which lies toward the north, and every man had a slaughter weapon in his hand. And 1 man among them was clothed with the linen, with a rider's ink on by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar, and the glory of the Yahweh, and the glory of Yahweh of Ezekiel was gone up from the church whereupon he was to the threshold of the house, and he cried unto the man clothed with the linen, which had the rod of ink on by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and cry for all the abomination that be done in the midst thereof. And unto the others he said in mount hearing, go ye after him through the city, and smite, that not your eyes spare, neither have your pity, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. And he said unto them, defile the house, and fill the courts with the slain. So go ye forth. And they went forth and slew in the city, and it came to pass, while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face, and cried and said, O Yahweh, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel, and thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? Then said he unto me, for the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great, and the land is full of the blood, and the city full of the perverseness. For they say, Yahshua hath forsaken the earth, and Yahshua seeth not. And as for me also, mine I shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their heads. Okay. Not in the world, but in Judah and Israel, and the church, the iniquity is great, and there is the slaughter takes place. Moreover, the multitude that is brewing and fostering the abomination are unconscious that they are acting as if Yahweh has forsaken the earth, as if he has left it for them to run it and to do with his people as they please. Here you see what it means to hear the rod and what it means to close your ears unto it.
And then we'll finish it up tomorrow.